It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber, along with Jim Cramer, who is back at our headquarters, as he has been every day throughout this economic crisis. We start this morning, with the markets, as you might expect. You just heard Joe Kernan discuss the Dow futures, which are up, given the performance of Boeing, which has had quite a rebound of late. But overall, the markets do seem to be retreating ever so slightly from that historic move yesterday. Jim, let me bring you in, and let's just start there. A move like we saw yesterday doesn't typically begin the recovery from a downturn the likes of which we had, does it?
No. I mean, this was one of the greatest one-day bull markets I've ever seen. You had to come in when it was the darkest hour. And if you didn't, then I think you're coming in on total quicksand. We had a move that was so accentuated by the machines, David, algorithmic. Remember, they exacerbate whichever direction it is. And I want to go on records to say that I hate it just as much when it goes up as when it goes down, because it brings in a lot of people who think, you know what, maybe it's all clear. It's so not all clear that it's almost like you're lucky if you bought yesterday and you should ring the register today. I do think, look, we've seen some prices that are definitely going to hold up. But, David, everything I've heard this morning is about how we're ready and open for business, but no one talking about going to where they're ready. You're Boeing. Yeah, that's great. You want to fly? I mean, maybe we fly 6 months from now. When do you want to fly again?
That's a great question, Jim. You know, when you talk about what life is going to be like once the crisis passes,
right,
or when, in fact, people go back to so-called normal life, which the president indicates he would like to see as soon as, 2.5 weeks from now or
right,
so, you still wonder what behaviors are going to be like. Will people be flying? When will people ever stay in a hotel in a significant way again? When will tourists return to any part of the country, either within or from abroad? And so many other constant things we could go through. I don't know the answers. I mean, do you?
No, but this is really the focus. We've now seen the package go through. It's a great stimulus. We know that there are people, and we've got all the figures, who are going to get some money. That money may actually help them pay. It's almost like lunch money for some people. But, David, let's take the industry that was at the epicenter, where you actually see princess numbers alongside of South Korea and alongside of Taiwan. You've got an industry which we keep hearing from the president needs to be saved. But Secretary Mnuchin is a good business person. Dave, why do you save an industry that may be maybe years from now will come back? Maybe it never comes back. The world has changed. It's changed for office buildings. You and I heard Tom Barrack talk about, well, yeah, maybe the mortgage industry, they need help. But, David, will we still have huge offices when we know it turns out that Zoom and WebEx from Cisco work really well? I think it's time to start thinking about the future and what our country looks like after we beat this. It's different. It's never going to be the same.
You really believe, you don't believe that? I mean, we are social beings, and there is a need to want to congregate and be with each other, even in the workplace. Granted, I think many people are understanding they have an ability to work from home that perhaps they didn't necessarily fully realize previously. But that doesn't make it any less likely, does it, Jim, that they're not going to want to congregate with their coworkers and that work is still easier done in some fashion the way, I mean, you and I are going to be back together one day, right? And I'm looking forward to that. We're better when we do that. This works.
I agree.
But it's
we
not
do
ideal.
Like companionship. Absolutely. We like to work together. We think the program is definitely better. But, David, if I'm running a company and I'm trying to figure out how to meet the ESG, trying to meet the new world,
yeah,
what a great way to be able to say, I just cut my carbon footprint. Everyone's staying at home. I mean, that may be an imperative. The rents have to come down. I don't think many companies want to pay the same old rent when they have congregation rooms, but they don't necessarily have people being at the office. I don't know. I mean, I look at behavior, and you could argue, Jim, it's too
yeah,
early to think about behavior. But do we need all the airlines? Do we need all the oil companies? Do we need cruise lines? I want all those people from cruise lines to get jobs. I'm not trying to be anti-job. And I think that the cruise lines obviously are a very inexpensive, great way to take a vacation. But, David, there is without a doubt a pandemic that has been centered in some places and on some things. And I just do not think, even if you cut the price to nothing, you know, a round trip, I checked the other day to L.A., David, $59 yeah. round trip to L.A. You want to take that? I mean, it sounds like a bargain. But does it sound like a ticket to a hospital? If there is a hospital, ticket to a ventilator. If we have ventilators, that is a ticket I don't want to ride.
Yeah, I understand that. And I want to talk more with you about, you know, what I would assume we agree on will be the continued conversion to the cloud by so many businesses because yes. of the trends you're talking about. But Jim, the overriding story yesterday, in part because as it sent the market higher, and this morning, is, of course, the legislation we've gotten out of Congress. And I do want to get to Ayman Javers, who's got not just the details we're aware of, Ayman, I understand, but some details perhaps that nobody is aware of yet. So please fill us in.
Yeah, that's right, David. So this is a handshake deal last night. The bill text has not been released yet, so we're all trying to scramble to figure out what's actually in this massive $2 trillion bill. I've been on the phone this morning and texting with senior administration officials, and I can tell you some of the details of what's in there we're starting to get from our sources. One is that the payroll tax cut that the president was pushing for is in this deal, but it's only on the employer side. Remember, the payroll tax is paid by employers and employees. Originally, it had been proposed that the tax cut would be on both sides of that equation. Now I'm told by two senior administration officials that the payroll tax cut is in this deal, but only on the employer side, not on the employee side. Employees would benefit from the direct checks that they're getting, also from this enhanced unemployment insurance, but not from a payroll tax cut. Now, employers, this isn't free money for them. They would have to pay this back, the payroll tax holiday, on a staggered basis over the coming years. So think of it as you'd have to take the payroll tax holiday in 2020 and then pay that money back in 21, 22, et cetera. And there's a formula in there for how companies will have to do that. On the airline front, that was the major stumbling block that kept this thing delayed late into last night. They signed they agreed to the deal just around 1 a.m. last night. I'm told that there are direct grants now to the airlines that do not have to be paid back inside this deal, but they must not make layoffs through a date certain later this year. I don't have that date yet. We'll see it in the text. But there's some period of time in here in which the airlines have to agree, we'll take the money, but we're not going to make any layoffs. And then also, there is a provision here for the government to take an equity stake in some of these airlines, and therefore taxpayers could share in the upside if those companies bounce back in the years to come, as we saw back in the 2008 bailout. Finally, I'm told that the president is aware and did agree to the specific provision that's in there that was highlighted by Chuck Schumer last night, which prevents the entities controlled by the president, the vice president, and members of Congress and others to take advantage of aid through Treasury. That would specifically seem to be aimed at the president's own companies that he owns. I'm told the president is aware of that provision and did agree to it. One carve out that I think we're going to need more detail on and we don't have in terms of how this applies to the companies that the president owns specifically is whether or not that provision would apply to any aid coming from the Fed or if it just applies to aid coming from the Treasury as of right now, which would be perhaps more politically directly controlled by the president himself. So a lot of new details there, guys, but that payroll tax cut, it looks like now is going to be for employers only, not for the employees.
Ayman, so many questions as well. Before Jim and I get back to our conversation, the $500 billion that's being allocated for liquidity assistance, again, part of that is that 60, I think, that's going to the airlines. But how is that right. going to be distributed? I mean, I feel like there are still a lot of questions in terms of the language, the $500 million that gets levered up by the Fed to $4 trillion. Who gets it? 500 employees or more or 500 employees or less? Do you have any details?
I don't have details on that yet. We're still working our sources on it. But one of the concerns that Democrats had about this was that the $500 billion would be under too much direct control by the Treasury Secretary. They wanted an inspector general and a committee of oversight on Capitol Hill to oversee that, to be able to look into that, see how it was being spent. They did get that. Treasury did agree to that in the end. And so there will be an inspector general watching over all of that to look for fraud and abuse in it. But my understanding is that there'll be a lot of discretion here for the Treasury Department in terms of doling out some of this money. We're going to just have to wait and see what the details are as they emerge through the morning, guys.
Yeah, so much to keep an eye on, Eamon, and we appreciate you obviously doing it for us as we all try to stay on top of this. Jim, just give me your take here in terms of what you're hearing specific to the legislation and how it's going to be implemented. Of course, so much of it yet to come.
Well, look, I think that there's some industries that are easier than others. You see Boeing up literally 50% from a very prescient Goldman upgrade. And a lot of that is because it's so simple to give Boeing money and have not a trickle down, but actual payments, because there are 1,700 companies that supply parts to Boeing, 2 million people getting a possibility of the restart of the 737. They're seeing an influx of orders of all places, China, not talked about enough by the president. And I come back and I say, okay, well, that industry is easier. Everything else I just heard from Eamon, what happened to the small and mid-sized business? I mean, a payroll tax cut for the business, for the managers, I mean, that's heinous. It's completely heinous. We help the rich people. I mean, that wasn't the purpose of what I heard either Secretary Mnuchin or Speaker Pelosi talk about. The idea was to get money beyond just the money, the handouts, get money into companies to be able to make it so that the businesses stay open. I know that Starbucks yesterday, right, Kevin Johnson talked about a pledge, 30-day pledge, pay whether they open or not. But I don't think we're talking about the idea that a payroll tax cut, holy cow, that's going to help a dry cleaner, a restaurant owner? Wow, what a, you know, hey man, those people have just been had.
Yeah, I mean, that is the key question here, how you get money in the hands of, and obviously there are direct payments being made, but you referenced it earlier, some of it may just be lunch money at this point, right, Jim, but how you actually are going to be able to sustain so many of the workers out there that we've talked about,
right,
hair salons and nail salons
what,
and
David,
gyms, and you just go on and on.
But it was a great idea, and I hope it survives, and we should be talking far more about it. The loan to those companies that's forgiven if they keep their people on. Now, that is substantive. Right. The idea of the payroll tax cut, well, you know what? Rich do like to get richer. It's an amazing thing. It worked in the beginning of time. I don't think that we're trying to get a new social order. Speaker Pelosi was under heavy pressure to get a new social order, get stakes in all these different companies. So when their stocks go up, cash them in, help the Treasury, because the Treasury is really paid by working people. That didn't happen. In return, what I hope did not occur as part of the package was just a terrific benefit for those who are already wealthy. I think we have to focus on the fact that they did come up with that loan package, and the loan package is going to make it so we can get open for business if people are willing to be with other people in a restaurant, which I'm not sure about yet. I mean, I don't know, David. I love you. I love your family. But come Easter, I can't see breaking bread with you at Bar San Miguel.
No, I look forward to the day that we can do that. I don't know when that is, other than when there are antivirals that are very effective and that therefore people are not as concerned if they contract the virus. Obviously, the day when that comes, that there's a vaccine, that will certainly erase our concerns, I guess, Jim.
Right. Well, it's contactless.
And or when the warmer weather comes and perhaps the transmission rate declines dramatically. Right now, certainly in the New York area, they're in the midst of a absolute crisis. There are other parts of the country as well that are dealing with potential overwhelming of their healthcare systems. And that's where things stand. But a lot of the country is not like that.
No, it's like the quarantine, if you were in New York. I mean, that's very daunting. Obviously, there's some incubators in New York that people may not have in other areas. They're very similar to what we're seeing in Madrid, which is now trying to, I mean, unfortunately, may surpass Milan. We have to stay focused on those, because remember, we do have the Beijing Shanghai model, Hong Kong model, though there's some reinfection there. And then we have the Milan Madrid model. I don't think anyone knows which we are yet. In New York, though, it sure does. Unfortunately, if it's as much as Governor Cuomo's talking about, we're going to be on the Milan Madrid path. We're not going to be on the Singapore path or on the Beijing path. I think it's worth knowing which one we are before we decide to play Happy Desert here again.
Yeah, no. And obviously the shortage of ventilators is a key part of that, and other equipment as well. And still waiting on testing, although it is finally really ramping up.
Do you have testing?
We're going to take a break. not as quickly as we'd like.
Right.
No,
I mean,
not as quickly as
we'd like. If we tested like in South Korea, then I think I would be willing to give you a high five like we did every single morning for the last 5 years. But I'd like to see the test. Right now I'm contactless with everybody, including my wife, which is not, contactless with your wife and kids. Suboptimal.
Yeah, that is suboptimal. I'm sorry to hear that. At least I've still got the.
We do a lot of FaceTime.
Yeah.
It's amazing how you don't really look your same when you're like going to bed with the FaceTime.
Starting to do the FaceTime happy hour. Have you been doing that?
I did a FaceTime birthday the other day. We have a drink around
7 o'clock.
We all did Zoom. So I might as well invite Eric Yuan in. I mean, he's killing it, right? That's the CEO of Zoom. Humble man.
I recommend it. All right, Jim, when we come back from this break, you and I are going to talk a bit more about stocks, the old-fashioned way that we used to, certainly, given the moves that we've seen. Squawk on the Street's right back. Welcome back to Squawk on the Street as we count you down to an opening bell about 12 minutes from now. Of course, the floor of the New York Stock Exchange remains closed. We remain in different locations as well, but that doesn't stop us from being able to do a mad dash this morning, Jim. Nike, I know, is a feature, of course, having reported earnings as well.
Well, first, Ed, what day is it?
It's hump day.
Thank you. I need some normalcy. Without normalcy and continuity, it is just too rough to be able to handle these times. David, Nike, rather extraordinary quarter last night. Kind of reminded me of the days before COVID. And one of the things that was terrific in this clinic that John Donahoe put on, which is very similar to what Mark Parker did. I guess you get there, suddenly you learn how to do a conference call. Not that John wasn't bad, and he's a friend of ours, but he talked about this. David, China. People got back to work and retail traffic began improving significantly. Today, nearly 80% of our stores in China reopened. The numbers are very good in China, which is why you will see this stock up. One of the things that's amazing, David, is that they've very quickly shifted to an online strategy where necessary. But they've given you a template about what can happen when you have a worldwide company with a great balance sheet that has tremendous reach and a product people want. And they want during this era. So I recommend anyone reading this just to be able to sense, there is a path for a lot of international companies that make products that are in strong demand. And the path is the Nike path. This is going to be studied one day in business school they still have business schools now that we have, I don't know, they probably proved to be too expensive. But it's absolutely the clinic that we're looking for. And it made me feel like, you know what? Business will come through this. Not small business. I predict many bankruptcies. But big business with big balance sheets, Nike, Starbucks, they're going to win.
Oh, well, yeah. And you mentioned Starbucks as well, of course. Also yesterday, Kevin Johnson talking to us about how China's coming back online. We didn't get the traffic numbers from him yesterday, Jim, at least not during our conversation with him. But it is following a similar trajectory, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, in Wuhan, people are just, starting to go up in Wuhan. Against that, we do hear and see pictures at night of China, and it does look like that it's almost as if people are being forced to do things, forced to shop there. I don't know. I'm waiting for Shanghai Disney to open because Disney's got enough clout that they can be able to say, you know what, it's not yet right. Disney is trying to put it, not that Nike's doing anything wrong. Remember, Nike's, you can do online. Starbucks, obviously, welcome in that community. But Disney does not want to be in a situation where they start it and someone gets sick. And I commend them because they certainly are under pressure from the government, I have to believe, to open. And they're foregoing revenue in favor of customer safety and health.
Yeah. All right. We'll come back to names like Disney, of course, which, along with so many others, had a very big up day yesterday. Right now, the market not looking nearly as strong, although it is a mixed picture given the performance of Boeing. Nike also, as Jim mentioned, of course, going to be up sharply. We're right back after this. We got an opening bell about 9 minutes from now. Stay with us on Squawk on the Street. Welcome back to Squawk on the Street. Jim, at the beginning of the show, you were talking about how this crisis is going to change behavior for the long term. And I briefly mentioned something that's come up in a number of conversations for those who are looking for opportunity. I'm curious to get your thoughts. The conversion to the cloud. We talk about it all the time, of course, in our normal days. And it's been a key theme of yours for years. But one would imagine that is only going to pick up the pace here, given all the people who are working remotely and all the other things associated with that.
Oh, totally. I mean, I've been dealing with a bunch of companies that you know, Zscaler, very oriented toward that, CrowdStrike, Cisco. I mean, Cisco's a behemoth, and they're talking about just huge numbers of minutes being used on their video. And by the way, let's not forget, it also makes it so that if you're in Singapore or you're in India, it doesn't matter. You're all in one chat. So I think things are going to change. That's cloud-based. And if you're brick and mortar, it just gets worse and worse, David. I mean, the layoffs, the stores that are closing. And if you take a look at the stock prices, I'm a huge believer in David Simon. I wish he would come on. He's great. Don Wood, too. These are fantastic operators. Steve Tanger, I mean, $6 stock. But I don't know. I mean, is that model where you want to go? I think Amazon could go to $3,000 in this market, David. Amazon Web Services must be just crushing it. So, yeah, I think the world has changed. Very few people I know, David, want to admit this. People want to go back to the way it was. It can't. It turned out to be too lucrative not to go back.
When you mention Amazon, of course, given everything New York is going through, I can't help but think about the lost opportunity there. Jim, stand by because we want to get to Phil LeBeau, who's got more news for us about a major car manufacturing plant in this country that is going to be stopping production. Phil.
David, I believe this is the last final assembly plant that is still functioning in this country. It is the BMW plant down in Spartanburg, South Carolina. It will be shutting down starting this Friday. They're going to shut it down for 2 weeks. The significance here is that this is BMW's largest plant worldwide. I think last year they built 420,000 vehicles. A good chunk of those are exported, many to Asia. But obviously, the world has changed when it comes to vehicle demand. And in addition to the news about BMW, let me give you some sense of how much demand has changed, guys. New estimate from IHS Market in terms of auto sales in the U.S. this year, dropping down to a sales rate of 14.4 million vehicles. Just for comparison, the U.S. last year, vehicle sales were 17 million, new vehicle sales. Now the expectation, 14.4 million for the year, maybe as low as 11 million for the month of March.
Hey, yeah, Phil. You know, Phil, yesterday we had Adam Jonas join us from Morgan Stanley. He had 13.5 million SAR, in other words, for the year. Phil, how much of this is about their workers in South Carolina and the concern about the virus versus that significant depletion in demand?
It's mainly about workers and mainly about the shelter-in-place orders, especially for the supply chain. We're to the point now where, you know, all the automakers, generally speaking, they're all using the same suppliers. They may be building different parts with different specifications, but generally speaking, they're using most of the same suppliers. Well, many of those suppliers, especially those in the upper Midwest, they're in states that have shelter-in-place orders. So not only do you have the big three shutting down their plants, but we've seen it from Honda and Toyota, now BMW. And so the supply chain is shut down. It's going to be hard to build vehicles. And while we haven't seen it yet in South Carolina, at least I don't think they have a shelter-in-place, I mean, we see what's happening around the country. It's moving away from New York and Illinois and California and hitting other states. I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately that's part of the decision that BMW made in terms of what happens in South Carolina.
So what did we get down to in 2008, 2009? I remember we were so thrilled when we got to 12.5 in 2010. We were just like, wow, happy days are here again in that case.
You were down to about 10.2, 10.3 million. And that was the low point before they started slowly moving higher, you know, and it was a gradual, it'd go up to 11, then up to 12.2 million as you got into 2010, 11, 12. And that's, Jim, what's interesting here is after that happened and we had GM and Fiat Chrysler go through the government bankruptcies and Ford, while it didn't go through a bankruptcy, did the same thing in terms of redoing its balance sheet. They all said the same thing. If we ever have something like this again, we've got a fortress balance sheet. We've got a balance sheet so that we can afford, if the industry goes down to 10 million in volume, we'll be okay. We won't have to see things collapsing as we did back in 08. Nobody ever thought that we'd be in that position, but it's getting maybe not as bad in terms of overall volume, but it's a big drop going on right now.
Yeah, it sure is. Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau. Jim, in the name of normalcy, I'm going to come back to you with something that we would typically do when we're at the New York Stock Exchange when Carl was off, which is ask you what you think the key to this market is as we get ready for an opening bell.
Well, how about a return to the old days, David? There's a Deutsche Bank piece, reducing our price target to 270, but tilting bullish from here. Yes, Apple. This is, harking back to when we used to talk about a stock that went over $1 trillion, and it's back over $1 trillion. And you read this, you start talking about, well, maybe they're going to be starting opening stores around the world, and the service revenue stream is good. And I don't know about you, I paid my bill last night automatically. And, well, you know what, David? Let's watch Apple. If Apple can stay the course, we might have something.
Yeah, of course, Apple is only down about 16% for the year versus the decline in the S&P, Jim. That's roughly 24%. As we get an opening here, sort of a mixed picture as you might expect, I'm looking at a decent amount of green as a lot of stocks start to open. You were talking before we went to Phil about the shopping center mall operators. Obviously, the REIT sector has been under enormous pressure, as you might expect, in any number of areas, commercial, retail, and the like. The concern being that many of these landlords are not going to see their tenants pay their rent.
Right. I mean, we were talking about earlier in the show, they were talking about the word forbearance. Colin Kaplan, Todd Barrett, the idea, just forbearance, meaning let's just take a time out. This time out, look, that's what you do with your kids when you weren't allowed to knock heads anymore. There is no such thing as a time out. There's such a thing as you owe me money or else. There was a deal that broke down just yesterday, SL Green, Daily News. I mean, someone might owe money there. The people who are going to do the best here, David, might be bankruptcy lawyers, because there is no such thing as, you know what, guys, I'm not doing that well. Now, maybe at a rental level for individuals, we can have that. But there are laws, there are rules, there's real property considerations, and people owe money. And when you don't pay, it isn't like you say, you know what, guy, you know, just, hey, I'll come back to you. No, you're sued. And you're sued and you got to pay. And I think that unless you come up with something, some momentary change in the bankruptcy code, which will not happen, it's fanciful. David, I think we're going to be faced with a lot of companies that weren't able to pay and didn't get the time out.
Yeah, no, listen, you're certainly potentially correct in that. Now, that chorus of people, by the way, who were asking for that timeout, I mean, that continues. It's not going to happen.
Right.
And you remember it's almost 2 weeks ago when I asked Secretary Mnuchin, when we had him on that morning about that possibility. We're not going to have that national holiday, that stay in place sort of forbearance up and down. We do have the stimulus package emerging from the Congress, importantly, Jim. But to your point about bankruptcies, I mean, you know, I'm talking to people in the hotel industry. Now, this is not those who manage the hotels. It's not the Marriotts or the Hiltons,
right.
The actual owners of the hotels. You could see a wave of bankruptcies there. I mean, these things can't operate at 50% occupancy in a profitable way, let alone 10%. So even if they were to be closed and come back and only open at 50%, that's not going to cut it either. And there is certainly a lot of questions in terms of the ability of that industry to withstand what's coming at it.
Yeah, well, it's a double barrel there. I mean, you've got Zoom and WebEx, which says, you know what, you don't have to travel right now. We know you don't want to get on a plane because you think a plane's an incubator anyway. And then you have the travel and leisure budget of the regular person in this country. They're going to get a check. That check is not going to be able to go. That's not going for a trip to Wynn. It's not going for a trip to Las Vegas, which, by the way, it would be great if it did. But that's crowd gathering. And I don't think we want to crowd gather. I think that it's terrific what they're trying to do with trying to help small business in Washington. But again, I keep coming back to we do not want to see crowd gathering if you're Dr. Fauci. If you're the president, I don't mean to pit these two because they are obviously still working together. But if you have an Easter deadline which says you can have a gathering, and yet we keep thinking maybe it's a cold or a flu. David, I keep asking, name me a person who had a cold who had to go on a ventilator. I have never seen that,
yeah.
And you've never. And that's what we fear. Look, if it's a great taco al carbon at Bar San Miguel with a Corona, of course, I don't mind saying that, you know, versus a ventilator. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we have to start thinking like that. Now, in New York, maybe it's too close to home. Maybe there are other places where it seems like, you know what, we can go out as long as we practice some safe things. We got maybe goggles. Maybe we've got an N95. If the N95 has finally come back from China, we'll have some nice gloves that we used to clean dishes with. Sorry to my wife, I haven't done that in ages. But what it comes back to is, this is not it's safe getting together, and I don't feel that safety yet, and I don't think you do either.
Now, listen, I want to make it clear, the public health crisis, certainly for the New York area and other regions in the country, is very significant. You heard Governor Cuomo yesterday of New York talking about the need for 30,000 ventilators. And Jim, best I've seen, they're just not there. There is not that supply. We can keep hearing the administration saying certain things about ramping up. We're going to talk to actually the CEO of Medtronic in the next hour about their efforts. But that's still months away, months before you actually are able to produce what is going to be needed.
Very true. But I do want to just be sure that how I phrase what we're doing about with the payroll tax. That's an income. That's a tax deferral. I don't want to make it sound like the rich. I don't want to say I misspoke that the rich get richer. I think rich come out better than that. But it's not going to be the income tax. It's not a cut, as Secretary Mnuchin has informed me. Just a way to get more cash flow to big and small businesses. So I don't want to leave the impression that what this is just a break for the rich. And if I did that, I apologize, because the employer payroll tax is deferred, not a cut. I want to be sure that people think I misspoke. I am so concerned, David, about the worker, because I don't want the worker to file bankruptcy. I don't want the company that employs 10 people. That, to me, is the sweet spot of America. That's who we need to protect. If we protect them, then I think this thing comes out whole. If we protect the top dogs, I think they figure out a way to not have to hire more people.
Yeah, no, your point's a good one, and we're going to be very focused on the way that money is distributed and whether or not it successfully does get to those very workers you're discussing. You know, on Squawk Box, as you well know, Jim, they did have a conversation with former Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, one of the men, of course, who led the nation through the financial crisis and the Great Recession of 2008. He seemed more sanguine, perhaps, than you, or at least are sounding to me, in terms of what is coming our way. Take a listen.
There's going to be a very short recession in the next quarter or two, because everything is shutting down, of course. And you know, the GDP figures are calculated on an annual basis. So if activity is 10% lower this quarter than last quarter, you multiply that by four, and you say, well, there's a 40% rate of decline. So you're going to see some really scary numbers.
Yeah.
All right. He did say scary numbers, but he also just used the words recession, of course, Jim. Plenty of people that you and I speak to actually use the word depression.
Yeah, I know. And I always hesitate to use that word, because what comes with depression is we don't talk about it as the societal. I mean, you know, we had leaders during the Depression that made it seem like that perhaps the Republic was at stake, that there were moments when if we didn't get to the bread lines and didn't help people and didn't try to break up the Hoovervilles, that we thought that maybe democracy was in peril. So I certainly don't want to. I'm trying to come up with another term between depression and recession that indicates it. Recession. It's a public health issue. This is a medical crisis that we don't want to turn into a financial crisis. I actually found Ben Bernanke to be, Chairman Bernanke, to be reassuring, but not in a false way. Just in a, like, you know what, we've been there. We kind of have a game plan. It's not necessarily this game plan. But I found him, if there's anyone who can be, that has a right to be sanguine, it's that man. And perhaps that there is a way that we will be able to enjoy the fruits of our labor again, other than being in our home. The American way. I mean, I found myself, you know, I talked to Dave Tepper, and not just because Cam Newton was cut. I don't know. He always played well when I saw him, but probably hurt. But will football start? Yeah. I keep hearing that, by the way. People aren't even talking about baseball. Well, will we have a season? And there are American ways of doing things. And one of them is we go out, we shop, we go to games. I keep thinking about that moment when Adam Silver canceled the NBA. And I want normalcy like you do. And normalcy means we go to a game and we're happy to see each other. And, David, I don't know if it's going to go back to that anytime soon. And that's something that Ben Bernanke did not address.
No, he did discuss what is a much stronger financial system, of course. Not saying that it isn't going to be leaned on heavily, but again, to your point, I think was fairly positive, at least in terms of all the things that have occurred over the last 11 years, particularly in those years that followed the financial crisis, to bolster many of the big banks right. and their balance sheets, their
David,
fortress balance
Zoom.
Sheets, as you and I like to say.
Watch Zoom.
Watch Zoom? Yeah. What about the airlines? So, Jim, shouldn't I watch those too? I mean, you got United up, you got Delta, you've got all the airlines.
We did get an upgrade of Southwest, which, of course, is incredibly well run.
Yep.
And I was debating the other day with my daughter to come home from Spain, try to make a run for it somehow, escape from New York, Snake Plissken. But I'm not
right.
sure. Southwest Air down 22% to 41, but it used to be at 29. I think you had to be the brave soul that bought it at 29, not the person who takes you out at 41. I'm not a buyer of the airlines, if only just because you always need demand. You need customers. And I don't see the customers
yep.
coming back yet.
Boeing shares, I mean, again, we've never seen anything like the moves right. that we have seen over the last week. And Boeing is no exception. In fact, it proves it. It's up 19% this morning, Jim.
Wait, can we please salute the Goldman guy who upgraded it at a moment when it looked like that was just fool's gold? Iron Pyrite, when he did it, I said, well, there's a guy who's willing to stick his neck right in the guillotine in the French Revolution. And yet it worked. And I think one of the reasons it worked is that there was a moment that's far more critical to the Republic than this one right now. Now, I think we're back in the Easter versus not Easter situation. And we're back talking about what drug, what antivirals versus longer term at home. But when that call was made, I think that people were thinking Boeing files for bankruptcy. That's the way that they can get out of the jam they're in. And then the money comes. Secretary Mnuchin, I think, and I'm glad to always have an open line with the secretary, but I think that there are industries that I absolutely realize are the gem of America. And David, if we can export yep. airlines again, the 737 is probably, if you ask me what the next act is in this crisis of capitalism, it is getting companies to buy our products. And the 737, I'm not using the term MAX anymore. I think that may not be the great nameplate. The 737 will be a sign
right.
that things are back.
Yeah. Well, Boeing certainly off of its, I mean, to say it's off its lows is an understatement. I think that thing had a 50-something billion-dollar market value only a couple of days ago. Boeing shares, now it's worth $85 billion again,
David,
Boeing is.
Did you think David Calhoun, in that excellent interview with Phil, who's doing the Lord's work here, acquitted himself well enough that maybe some things happened to make you feel that maybe Boeing is an actor worth throwing a lifeline to?
Yeah, I mean, I think it clearly seemed to benefit. Now, some people saying when he said, well, we don't necessarily need it. All right, fine. Don't take it.
Right.
It's still not clear to me exactly how or what they're going to need and how it would be apportioned. By the way, same with the airlines. You heard Eamon talking about grants and taking equity stakes. I mean, so much of this is still very much unclear in terms of the actual mechanism for distributing the money.
Right. I always come back to the cruise lines because they're non-U.S. paying. I mean, they pay tax Caymans, Bahamas,
right.
Panama, Philippine, Korean. And I don't mean, look, these companies employ thousands of people. And I've interviewed all the CEOs, and they're terrific. But you keep coming back to what is a cruise ship worth? And will we ever have 4,000 people once again hanging out with each other, knowing
yeah.
that perhaps the filtration of the air is not something you want to breathe?
Well, we are. One day we are going to be hanging out together again. I think maybe sooner than
you
think.
And me,
or
we're going to be on a princess cruise?
No, not on a princess cruise.
No,
no, that's true. We're not going to be doing that.
Okay,
no, just you
checking.
And me in
general. But remember, you don't go anywhere. You didn't go anywhere before the crisis, so nothing. You know, some people.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, this is an introvert's paradise.
For me,
paradise,
very little's changed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Very little's changed. I
well,
didn't
remember
really
what
prefer,
you said at the beginning
to just
of this,
not
David.
Leave my home.
You said.
What did I say?
I think you said, I don't really care for people.
Oh, yes, I did. I did mention that.
So I think that
I may revise that. You give me long enough and I might actually start to say, a little company's not so bad.
Advantage of the situation here. You have it verifies your behavior. My behavior. TJ Maxx isn't even open, for heaven's sake.
Jim, we want to get to Bob. But before we do, I did want to mention Occidental Petroleum. It's a story, of course, that you and I would be discussing again in a normal time, because Carl Icahn just got 3 board seats. Steve Chase came in back in there. He's now the chairman. I know Vicky Holub staying on as CEO, but they sort of caved. 11 board members now, a bunch leave, but they'll have 11 board members. 10 of them will be independent, and Icahn's got three guys on the board. The question is, who's going to buy this thing? Because that seems to still be the idea. And from what I hear from bankers in the energy industry, no buyers right now. No way. No chance.
Their company, and they won't Rusty Brazil's done the best work on this, RBN, and they're in that $33, $34 quadrant, which is what they need in order to be able to do well. I mean, they can cut their salaries to wherever they want, to negative five. This is not one that does well in this environment, particularly because, David, they got a loan. It was an 8% loan from Warren Buffett?
It was 8% money, $10 billion, as you well know.
Well, there you go.
They cut their dividend dramatically to save money, but they still got to pay Mr. Buffett, who we still haven't heard from, by the way.
No.
Silence is deafening.
Dairy Queen. But I would say that, remember, Mike Wirth was on yesterday from Chevron. Talk about a guy who laughed all the way to the oil well. I mean, he passed on that Anadarko purchase. That's probably the greatest thing he's ever done.
You're right. That was smart. I mean, remember, they had it. They had the deal. And he just would not go there in terms of the price that Vicky Hollub and Occidental were willing to pay. By the way, the biggest mistake they may have made was not allowing their own shareholders to vote. Remember,
right.
The Buffett money was specific to allowing it to be large enough cash deal
right.
to mitigate the possibility of having a shareholder vote. If their shareholders had been able to speak, they wouldn't have done the deal.
Was there anything done right there? I mean, I think that may be... I mean, this isn't the Snapple buy. Can you come up with a worse one? Oh, you had one with AT&T, didn't you? Dish?
No, there's a bunch. Listen, Monsanto, that didn't look too good for buyers.
It's getting
a little bit
better. This is a cake taker. This is a cake taker, David.
Nextel Sprint wasn't very good. This is up there. Rising the charts.
Mike Wirth was so great yesterday, he was on, but I did think he left out one line. It is better to be lucky than good.
Amen. And with that, let's get to Bob Pisani so we can check in on the broader market as well. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, guys. So we'll see if we can put together two back-to-back days. Haven't done that since early February. Boeing is the real driver here. We're talking about 150, 160 points in the Dow. Boeing, huge move up. All the airlines, we're seeing double-digit gains here in some of these airlines today. So the bill is real, and the markets are responding to that. In terms of sectors, 2 to 4% gains in the most beaten-up ones. These are the energy sectors, industrials, banks, retail. These are all the sectors that got the most beaten up in the last month here. A number of companies are continuing to withdraw guidance. Not as many as you would think, but we've seen overnight, we saw Whirlpool, we saw Target withdraw guidance. Twitter did that yesterday, joining. We've keeping the list of the 16, 17, 18 companies. MasterCard did it a little while ago. Deere, TripAdvisor, FedEx, Best Buy, Carnival, Darden, Marriott. It seems like a long list, but when you consider the S&P 500, actually fairly small number have withdrawn their guidance or refused to give in guidance. This is going to change, folks. In the next couple of weeks, you're going to see a raft of companies come out and either give very conservative down guidance for the second quarter or they're going to withdraw guidance for the full year altogether. I think that's going to be a big issue. And that's one of the reasons, of course, the market keeps gyrating. Even overnight, the S&P gyrated in a 100-point range, 1,000 points in the Dow, indicating that still everybody's fairly clueless about how to price the earnings. Overseas here, modest gains in the stock 600, at least there was a few minutes ago here. Hang Seng over in China, a two-day rally that they've had here. That's kind of significant. The biggest one, though, the Nikkei. Look at this here. That's 8%. Nikkei's up 20% in the last 3 days. That's a huge, huge rally there. That's the big global market that's had the biggest move. I still just want to point out, about 3 weeks ago, I pointed out that this is a global takedown, that the markets were down right across the board. It's really rather remarkable. This is still the case. The S&P 500, 28%. This was before the open, but 28% from the 52-week highs. Europe, 29%. That's the stock 600. Emerging markets, 29%. Japan's only 20%, but a day ago, it was also 29%. It's had a huge rally in the last 48 hours, as I mentioned. So you see that remarkable, the entire global market is still pretty much down the same. Even here in the United States, if you look at various ways you slice and dice sectors from various ways, like growth is down 25%, value's down 30%. Okay, that's a difference. But when you're talking about numbers this high, it's still pretty darn close. Momentum strategies, the buy stuff that's been working in the last 6 months, that's down 27%. How about low volatility stuff that's not supposed to move that much compared to the overall markets? When it moves, well, that's down 30%. So you get the point here. Even with all these gyrations in the last few weeks, even with the bill, even with the Federal Reserve acting, the overall market is still moving remarkably in tandem. The one exception I would make here is the Russell 2000, which is definitely acting a lot worse than the overall market, indicating it's the small cap stocks that are still very much under pressure. Guys, back to you.
Yeah, and that has been an underperformer throughout, even when things were a lot better. Bob, thank you. Bob Pisani. Let's get to Rick Santelli now. Check in with him on the overall tone in the bond market. Rick.
Good morning, David. You know, it's hard to have normalcy, but I'm the market guy. I'm going to try to give you as much on the markets as I can. Look at a chart starting Friday of 10-year note yields. What's interesting is that we've really flattened out. Think about it. So Friday's close was around 85. Monday was 79. Yesterday was 85. Today we're hovering in the low 80s. It really has started to consolidate, and that is a good thing. Now look at a year-to-date chart of 10s. And this is important because we've only covered a fraction from the low at 54 to the right of what we've covered so far year-to-date. So 120 is the extreme on top recently, and of course, 54 on the bottom. I would suspect that in either direction, if you go through, you're going to have some follow through. I personally think higher would be better than lower. If you do a year to date of boons, look at the difference. It's covered pretty much on the right side of that V, everything we had year to date. So minus 15 on top, minus 86 on the bottom. That could confine the rest of the trading for quite some time. And you know, we had Ben Bernanke on today, and he said something I just love very quickly. Go to the board, 1960 to present, 16% just shy of 1981. This is the anomaly. Interest rates were trending down. This was probably distorted. And I guess the reason I even bring it up at all is because Ben is right. Let's recalibrate all our policies. Everything's about inflation, and we're wrong. The 80s have come and gone. David, back to you.
Yeah, they certainly have, Rick. Barely remember them at this point. All right, let's get to Meg Terrell now and get an update on all things coronavirus related. Meg.
Hi, David. Well, we're specifically looking at Italy today because we had seen a couple days of new case numbers there and new daily death numbers in Italy declining. And that spurred a lot of hope that this might be turning a corner in that country. Here we have, looking back to the end of February, Italy's new case counts and new deaths. And you saw on Saturday what looked like could be a peak at about 6,500 new cases that day and 795 deaths. However, we did see that start to tick back up again yesterday. So I've been talking with epidemiologists to say, can we read anything from these numbers? Do they actually tell us anything about the effect of the lockdowns in Italy? And can we extrapolate that to what we're seeing in New York and in the United States? Now, the message from epidemiologists is it's probably too soon to tell. University of Minnesota's Dr. Mike Osterholm telling me he's looking for at least 2 weeks of these data to kind of even out any changes that we could see in testing and the workload coming from Italy. They put their lockdowns into effect basically at the beginning of March. March 8th is when they started locking down the northern provinces. March 9th, the entire country. Harvard's Bill Hainage telling me he's looking for 4 weeks from those lockdowns to start seeing the flattening of the curve. Now, if you look around the world, what we're hoping that we can start to try to look like is these Asian countries, South Korea, China has managed to flatten its curve. Japan has a more flat curve. And we've got a great graphic here to show you what those look like. Our Nick Wells and data made this. Those horizontal lines is where we want to go. But unfortunately, the orange is the U.S., the red is Italy. Hoping to move toward a flatter curve, but we are not there yet, guys. In terms of New York, I'm still looking for a few more weeks to see if things start paying off. And of course, the pace of new cases here just rising rapidly. Jim and David.
Yeah, thank you, Meg. Of course, we're New York is the epicenter right now. We certainly are hoping that things will flatten as soon as possible. Thank you, Meg Terrell. Jim, I want to turn to you now for a stop trading. One of the names in the focus, I know, is one that relies on ad sales, even though its viewership slash usage may be up. Ad sales trending the other way.
I think that when you look at the trading in Facebook, you'll see exactly what I'm most worried about in this market. So people felt so positive last night when we went home that after Facebook reported what is definitely something that requires a number cut, and that has to do with the fact that decline in advertising, the stock immediately went up anyway, as if, you know what? Of course that's in the stock. What do we have to worry about? Well, David, that turned out to be a false step. The real step is when you don't make your numbers, your stock goes down. And I think this is what you have to worry about, because Facebook's one of the early companies to talk about how their quarter's doing. And nobody's giving them forbearance. No one's saying, hey, you know what? No one's right. Shrugging their shoulders at that, David. What they're saying is numbers down, sell. And that's, I think, is a precursor for what we're going to better get used to seeing.
Well, listen, we know when it comes to corporate America right now, or corporations around the world for that matter, any opportunity to save money, to get your hands on cash, they are taking, and appropriately so. And one of those is cutting back on your ad budget. It's not necessarily something you need, particularly when you know consumer demand is really not going to be there, Jim. So while we're seeing huge increases in usage numbers, I mean, think about Twitter, for example, which so many of us are relying on in a way that we might not have in the past. And yet Twitter's not going to have good numbers, is it? I mean, nobody on the ad sales front is doing anything.
No, I mean, look, you do hear is the huge traffic in non-monetizable parts of Facebook that it's going to become even more ingrained in people's lives. Well, Zscaler, thank you, Aline Meisler, that stock is up 7 straight days. Why? Because it's ingrained, because it does cybersecurity for at-home cloud. Okay, well, that's a secular change. One of the things that you do see at this point is a cyclical downturn. David, you always hear these companies say, you know, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Oh, geez, nobody did. They just wasted.
Jim, I mean, it bears watching, of course, you know, good old media in terms of always on my radar. But we know a lot of people are streaming. We know a lot of people are watching.
Would you let me stay?
Sales are
David, to the next stay the next half hour? I'll give you my tie.
Always. You stay. I only have one tie here.
I think you only have one
what
tie.
Can I tell you? I swear. And I didn't prepare appropriately. Let's face it, I didn't think that I would be sitting here.
Century 21, I'll get you 5 ties. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.